the transportation meeting will come to order. First of all, let's see. Representative Simonson, have you read the minutes?
Oh, I have, Madam Chair, and I'd like to move them.
Thank you very much. All those in favor of the minutes as presented, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes stand approved. The minutes for 314 stand approved. Representative Earhart, welcome to the committee, and would you like to present your bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I will move House File 1416 and make the motion to recommend it pass and send to Transportation Finance.
Okay. Representative Earhart is moving House File 1416, and if passed, it will go to Transportation Finance. Do you want to talk about your amendment first?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move DE1 amendment, H1416DE1.
Okay, if you would proceed, please.
Madam Chair, I have an amendment to the amendment.
Oh, okay.
Which is H1416A9. I'd like to move that. Did you take a vote on that or not? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Would you like to incorporate it to get it the bill into the shape you'd like?
I would, Madam Chair.
Okay. And if everybody has House, let's see, H1416A9 in front of you, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Madam Chair, which?
I will move that. Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, procedurally, have we adopted the DE1 amendment yet, or are we amending the DE1?
Well, originally you wanted to hold it on, so would, in that case, would we need to?
As we have, Madam Chair, we have 1416 in front of us and a DE1 amendment to the 1416 laying in front of us. These are just procedural questions, that's all.
Okay, thank you very much. Would you, do you want to proceed with the delete all, or do you want to add the amendment to your amendment for, Representative Earhart, would you just like to incorporate the A9 into your...
Well, I got to confer with counsel.
Okay.
Council says that we have moved the DE1 amendment, and now we're moving the A9 amendment. Is there any discussion? Because we're going to have Council explain what's going on.
Okay. So
maybe he can explain, and then we can...
Mr. Burris, would you like to proceed?
Madam Chair and members, procedurally, one approach would be to move the DE amendment, which has been done, and then move additional amendments to that DE amendment, discuss and vote on those in turn, and once discussion is done, renew the motion to adopt the DE amendment as amended. Under that process, the DE amendment would be what is under discussion. Additional amendments to the DE would in turn be discussed, and then ultimately the vote would be on the DE amendment and then on passage of the bill.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you say is we're going to hold the A9 till you're done talking about the DE1? Or do you want me to do the A9 right now?
I don't know. I give up.
No, no, I'm asking Mr. Burris. Tell me, do you want us to vote on the A9?
Madam Chair, I recommend voting on the A9.
Okay. Hopefully everybody has the A9 amendment in front of them. All those in favor of incorporating this, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, you now have amendment A9 also in attached to that. So would you like to proceed now, Representative Earhart?
Madam Chair,
if you just identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Matt Burris with Health Research. I believe you have in your packets a cross-reference summary. I'll just briefly touch on the provisions that are in the delete all amendment. The first of those is a MnDOT agency keeping bill that contained a number of different policy type provisions, including changes to the local sign program, a couple of provisions on state aid and notice on variances related to state aid, modification of MnDOT authority on transit provider payments, some changes to signage at rail crossings, and modifications on related to commercial driver's licenses and certificates that medical examiners must provide, as well as waivers, the waiver process for commercial driver's licenses. Another provision that's in the bill is establishing some and modifying legislative routes, as well as arranging for a couple of turnbacks to the local state aid system. There's also a change that's, again, a MnDOT agency provision on the parking ramps at the ABC ramps at the terminus of I-394 and permissible uses out of the account for those funds. The DE also includes establishment of a new Officer Tom Decker Memorial Highway. There's also a driver and vehicle services housekeeping and policy bill that's for the most part included in the DE amendment. The provisions include covering motor vehicle registration changes, some changes to the design of certain veterans plates, modifications to regulations of motor vehicle dealers, similar change on medical examiners for commercial driver's licenses, and a couple of changes related to enhanced identifications. There are a couple of sections that are not included in the delete all amendment as that was in the original bill. The next provision that is included in the delete all relates to people transportation, makes a couple of clarifications and modifications to type 3 vehicles and people transportation regulations. There's also a bill included originally on broadening the authority for local units of government to limit flashing lights. There are a number of provisions related to bicycle rules in the bill, and they essentially break out into three rough categories. One is on the driving rules for drivers in relation to bicycles and operating in bicycle lanes. The second relates to riding rules that bicyclists have, as well as equipment requirements for the bicyclists. And the third is on not parking or amending parking requirements to disallow parking in a bicycle lane. There are a couple of provisions on disability parking. The A9 amendment removed one of those provisions, which was also removed in the underlying bill when that was heard earlier this week. The delete all amendment includes a provision that the committee heard a while back on establishing a transportation ombudsperson office in MnDOT. There's also a provision authorizing MnDOT and some other executive branch agencies to establish a joint program office for public-private partnerships. And then finally, there's a MnDOT agency bill on Trunk Highway 169 rest area, moving the location of the rest area and land sales in connection to that.
Thank you. Okay, are there any questions? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Burris, on Section 25, turning at an intersection, I'm sorry I missed that discussion that day. It's about the bicycle stuff. And one of my concerns is that we're setting it up so that bicycles now take precedence over automobiles. Turning at an intersection, can you remember the discussion, or maybe to the Mr. Earhart, Chair Earhart? If I'm making a right-hand turn, and I'm turning through a bicycle lane, and a bicycle is overtaking me from the right rear, and I don't see him, and he hits me, who's at fault? Does this establish that the automobile is going to always be at fault, even if he's overtaken and struck by a bicycle coming from the rear, the right rear in particular?
Representative Earhart.
I have no idea, Madam Chair. Let's ask counsel.
And you know what, Madam Chair, it just occurred to me, we're sending this to finance, aren't we? And
correct.
Perhaps as I'm looking at the finance chair, I can ferret out some information, or we can drill down a little deeper there. Would that be possible?
Yep. Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, yes, and hopefully me and you can get in touch with Representative Kahn. I believe this was her provision.
You and I will do that, Representative Erd.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there any other questions at this point? Okay. Are there any amendments then? The first one I see is A7, and I think that's Representative Sundin's. Would you like to move your amendment?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move Amendment A7, please.
All those in, do you want to give some? Okay. Would you like to just give a brief description, please?
A7 cleans up some of the labor language that we should be requiring for any additional expansion of rail lines. And it provides for a uniform, it provides for uniform labor language throughout all the rail lines here in Minnesota. And it brings us into compliance with, wrong amendment. This one establishes a walkway to the moon. No, that's the wrong one too. Excuse me.
Well, Representative Bernardi would be happy.
Excuse me. A7 is all conveyance of state land in Coochin County. Give you a quick history lesson. 1958, there was an explosion and a fire on a wood treatment property there that DOT actually leased to this Page Hill Company, is the name of the company, and that the land adjacent to the railways that is owned by the DOT, leased to that company, was contaminated. And this contamination has been in existence for, 50-some years. But there's a deal struck between the Department of Transportation, Page Hill, and the railroad to clean that up. And it's a partnership agreement, and it's in place, and it does come with a price tag of about $1 million for the DOT. And we've got some options in front of us. We can cancel the lease with that company and clean it up, and that would be a one-time fix. That would shut down that company that employs approximately 24 workers, and their suppliers, probably 10 different other suppliers that truck goods in and out of that business, and that's not a very palatable solution. We can ignore it and kick it down the road, or we can deal with it, and we can deal with it today and save those jobs. And I'm in favor of dealing with it today, save those jobs. And I've consulted with the owners, county commissioners in that area, and everyone's in agreement that this is the best solution to a problem that nobody really wants to deal with. But it's ours.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Representative Runbeck?
Madam Chair and Representative Sundin, did the Environment Policy Committee say they did not need to hear this? They typically kind of collect all these conveyance bills.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative. I don't know the history of this. This was handed to me yesterday, and I just welcome the opportunity to bring it forth and deal with this mess up there and save those jobs.
Representative,
Madam Chair, and I mean, I think there's sort of a procedure. Maybe you've been through all those steps and hoops with DNR, and you've got the letters to say that the parties have agreed to this. Is that true?
We have people from the department that could probably answer some of those questions better than I.
Representative, Mr. Radin, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Eric Radin, MnDOT Government Affairs. MnDOT does occasionally have land transfer legislation, and those bills do not typically go to the Environment Committee. You may be thinking of the Omnibus Lands Bill, which deals with state parks and that sort of thing. In fact, there's a separate provision already that's an agency provision in this bill to transfer land down along Highway 169 for relocation of a rest area. And so there are instances, although not nearly as numerous as the DNR land transfers, where MnDOT does have legislation to allow transfers of property, and those typically do not go to the Environment Committee.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chair. Quick question. I think I heard $1 million somewhere about some cost of cleaning up. Who did you say was responsible for that? Those dollars?
I understand that's the ask, actually, from the department. That would be their obligation, the department's obligation. I don't know if that's out of their fund, present funds, or if that's additional.
Madam Chair and members, there is in the governor's supplemental budget request that came out yesterday, there is a $1 million general fund appropriation to the Department of Transportation for our share of the cleanup. There potentially would be other costs that would be covered by this company, as well as, I believe, Department of Agriculture has been named the responsible party as well. But that $1 million would be MnDOT's share, which, again, is a general fund appropriation request.
Thank you. Any further questions? Okay. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to either testify for or against this amendment?
Madam Chair, if I could just clarify quickly, Department of Ag is not the other responsibility or responsible party. It's BNSF Railroad that is the other responsible party.
Thank you very much. Seeing no other questions and nobody to testify, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. Amendment A7 passes then. Thank you. Next, we have Representative Swatsky's A1 amendment.
Madam Chair, I move that we look at A1, and it's a housekeeping clarification cleanup. Would you like to go ahead and...
Mr. Radin, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. You may remember the department housekeeping bill had a provision to repeal the schedule of payments to Greater Minnesota Transit providers. And although we did check with the Public Transit Association earlier, they came to us with a late concern that eliminating the schedule entirely, they were not completely comfortable with that. So we've worked with them to provide some comfort language, as you see in the A1 amendment, that payments for Greater Minnesota Transit assistance would be made quarterly. So that is the proposal. As I said, it's really just comfort language for the public transit providers in Greater Minnesota.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments? Representative Beard.
Quickly, Madam Chair and Mr. Radin, the repealer... on page 30, line 22, I'm just looking quickly at that. Is that the rule that was made about eliminating the schedule and repealing that rule then?
Mr. Radin?
Madam Chair and Representative Beard, the repealer on 30.21, which refers to 174.24 subdivision 5, is the current schedule that's spelled out in statute about when they receive payments from the general fund and from motor vehicle sales tax. And then the rules repealer that's right below that on 30.22, as well as on 110 of the amendment, are two rules that refer to that provision and statute that we're repealing.
I just want to be sure, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is seeing no further questions at the table, is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify or comment? Okay, seeing no one, all those in favor of Amendment A1, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion A1 passes. Thank you. Next, we have amendment. It's A11. I don't have an author for this.
Madam Chair, that's my amendment.
Representative Runbeck.
Right, and I'll move the A11. Madam Chair, what this deals with, we've got the ABC parking ramps that are owned by MnDOT, I think it is, and so there's a reserve in those accounts. And it looked like we were just searching for ways to spend that money, and this amendment would simply say that based on the amount in the reserves, we would reduce the parking fees proportionately or in that amount.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions, comments? If I see none at the table, Representative Dean, did you want to testify?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is an amendment onto the bill that I actually introduced and has now been incorporated into the omnibus bill. And I'd like to speak against the amendment. There are structurally some things that don't work within statute relative to the fares in a parking ramp that is adjacent to or in proximity of private parking ramps as well. And in addition, the money that is there is being used for the improvements on the ramp or for individuals that actually use the ramp. So, for instance, if you have folks from your community, like in Minnetonka, who are going down to Twins game, that excess money is going to be used for their type of amenities, as well as Albertville and other parts of the region where people come to sports events, as well as those individuals that do choose to use that parking ramp as their daily work as well. So I would ask that members vote against this amendment.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the... Oh, Representative Runbeck.
Sure. Thank you. And Representative Dean, do you happen to know what the parking fees are? Actually, I don't. So do you know what they're charging?
I don't know specifically.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that it varies based on whether you're parking there for a day or whether you're parking for sporting events. In the city, generally, sporting events do tend to cost more than general parking. So it's a variety of different rates depending on whether it's what type of event, as well as if it's a day-long parking or those types of mm-hmm. parking rates.
And Madam Chair and Representative Dean, you're saying that you don't want to undercut the private ramps on either side of it, more or less? Is that what I heard you say?
I'm not saying that I don't want to do that. I'm saying I believe that statute doesn't allow us to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments from the table? Is there anyone in the audience that would also like to testify on this? Seeing no one, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
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 All those opposed say no.
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 Okay. The amendment fails. And that's the A11 amendment. It's not going through. The next amendment we have is 282, the passenger rail. or I'm sorry, A130282. Who's Representative Sundin? I think this one is yours.
I think I've got it right this time. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a labor conformity law that I mentioned. It's a good bill. We've heard it before. If there's any further questions, we could access Phil Pauly from the UTU to answer any questions on this.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, which amendment? What's the number?
Pardon?
I thought we said 813.
A13-0282.
-0282.
And it says passenger rail commissioner's duties. Any questions, comments? Seeing none at the table, is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify?
I don't see it.
Okay. Mr. Peterson? Please identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name's Scott Peterson from MnDOT. And we do have some concerns about this amendment. We've seen legislation of this type before, and our concern stems from, you know, we don't have plans in the near future to contract with an operator for passenger rail service that would be anything other than a Class 1 railroad on a Class 1 railroad track. And so some of the changes in the bill basically move us away or open up, actually, our ability to contract with other operators, which may at some time in the future be a possibility. But by changing that and opening that up, basically then it calls into question whether or not some of these Federal Railroad Labor Act provisions would actually apply to some of those agreements. If we were to contract with a Class 1 railroad, as I understand it, all these provisions, all the appropriate provisions that govern railway labor agreements and laws actually apply in that instance. And so our concern stems from the fact that we are not as familiar with these things, these federal provisions, as we would like to be in order to get some comfort level with the requirements that then they place on the department. Opportunity to enter into these contracts is out in the future. We haven't invested in the expertise and the analysis that would provide that insight to us. And when the time comes, you know, we anticipate that we probably would do that. The original language in the bill that I think was heard in this committee actually mirrors language that is in statute already with respect to our commuter rail operations, and it's been working well for us. And to that extent, we're comfortable that we know what our connection is and the responsibility of the agency is. But this language here takes it a little bit farther, and for those reasons, and we have concerns about this amendment.
Thank you. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, this does look really familiar to me. I know it's been up for 4 or 6 years, and it seems to me that we actually adopted a version of this last year in the omnibus bill. The one that everybody said, okay, this makes sense because this is already existing federal law. Are you saying that this amendment in front of us now is not the same language we adopted for commuter rail and actually goes beyond that? Is there something else moving in here that I'm not picking up on? Because I know this is a lot of new language on page 2 of this amendment.
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair and Representative Beard, yes, I don't have the other language in front of me at the moment, but we actually had a bill. I think it was last year, or maybe it was the year before, that was similar in many respects to this particular bill, but again, it mirrored the commuter rail language that's already in statute that gives the commissioner the appropriate authorities to operate the commuter rail line, and then this modifies that in ways that we're not comfortable with at this point in time.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, I know federal railway law is a little bit different, and it applies to all railroads that move out there, and I'll just remind the committee that was a Republican committee and Republican chair that actually vetted it and said, okay, we can do this, and everybody was on board. Everybody was in agreement, and it was completely non-controversial.
Frankly, this one's taken me a little by surprise, and there is a lot of stuff in here, especially on Subdivision 3, that I haven't seen before. Maybe it would be the, let me suggest to the committee, be in our best interest, perhaps to lay this one aside until we can actually have the time to hear it and hear people who engage in this every day tell us what then this means. That would be my suggestion to the committee. Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you, Mr. Peterson, for your explanation.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did carry one version of this. I remember, I think, a couple years ago, it gave Governor Pawlenty so much heartburn that he vetoed the entire bill over it. Do you remember that, Representative Beard? But I do recall that lines 21 through 29, I believe, were at least similar to the language. I don't have the side by side, but my understanding of that, of at least this section, and I can't comment on the section lines 9 through 20, but this is comfort language because I think in Florida or someplace there may have been some question about the enforceability of the of these federal statutes. I'm not exactly sure, but I know there was an issue. And I had to call one of my old history professors at McAllister College to become familiar with this, but some of these are from like the early 20th century. The Railway Labor Act and the Retirement Act, et cetera. So, I mean, it's pretty straightforward early labor law around protecting various rights. So I don't know why we would be concerned about it. But, you know, Representative Beard, if lines 9 through 20 are different and problematic, then we should take a look at it. But I don't see the rest of the language on page 2 being, you know, the recitation of these laws being problematic. But
thank you, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wonder, I mean, it does seem like it, particularly the line 210 and 211, that it does require us to know more about what's in that regulation. It seems to me we ought to be having an attorney who knows what that is give us a rundown on it, because we don't know.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chair. Too. I guess my concern also comes to line 19 through 20, in which it says that if we do have a contract with the railroad, we will be responsible for the allocation of financial responsibility, et cetera, of insurance for the parties of all types of claims or damages, which would also qualify as health insurance and other insurance issues. Now for claims also, and I think that's something that's maybe beyond our scope as well that we should be concerned about.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions from the table? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify on this issue? Mr. Crawley, if you would identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Philip Crawley with United Transportation Union. I would just like to try to clarify a couple things. First, UTU General Counsel Larry Mann, who is an expert in this field, and I did participate on a telephone conference call with the MnDOT Chief Counsel Parker, as well as Mr. Peterson, I believe it was a week ago Thursday. And first of all, we did send... and that these citations from lines 221 to 229 were sent also by email from Mr. Mann from the United Transportation Union to Chief Counsel Parker, and that these are correct citations of law that are also, you know, 80 years old, but are also in effect today. So that I would like to clarify first out. Secondly, it is our intention by moving this that we think we are helping Minnesota and the MnDOT Passenger Rail Office get our railroad cars in a row, as they say, to get our train in order for any future efforts to contract for any New Start passenger rail. This will help the state by setting forth this baseline. So this is a very important piece. And then finally, to Mr. Peterson's comments, we have chapters subdivision 2 and also at a little later in the bill where Amtrak is referenced. That was the department's language, if I'm not mistaken. And Amtrak is and may be interested in trying to have a new passenger service in the coming year. So that's an important piece, increased service in the state. But to the also other pieces is that we simply, there is a minor change where before where there's a reference to class one, and we had this conversation prior between council, by taking out the class one requirement, we're now opening it up to all railroads, to all operators, and thereby increasing the flexibility for MnDOT to contract with whomever they want, not just a class one. So in closing, and I am a railroad conductor of 32 years, I am a state director, I do work in these areas of law on a daily basis. I would have preferred that our attorney and counsel be here. I can arrange for our attorney and counsel to be here and answer any questions you may have, and we are committed to continuing to work with MnDOT. I think that has been clear to MnDOT. So I would respectfully ask Mr. Chairman and Madam Chair in the committee if you would move this bill today and we are committed to continue to work and explain these, and we can have our counsel out here personally to assist in that. But this is correct language, this is boilerplate language, and the request for moving it this year is to help our state move forward now for passenger rail. I'm concerned that without this, quite frankly, in the federal scheme of any future funding and assistance to the state, I'm telling you, the train is leaving the station. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I mean, I'm going to vote for the amendment. It's similar to the bill I carried but in the past. But I guess, Mr. Qualley, maybe it would be helpful for the committee to for you to tell us why, in the first place, you need this. Am I remembering correctly that there were some cases around the country? Was it in Florida? What happened there that is causing you to want to maybe preemptively make sure that that doesn't happen here? Maybe that would be useful for the committee to know.
Mr.
Briefly, I guess.
Very briefly, I am not an expert on the affairs that happen with the Tri-State Rail Service in Florida, nor with SEPTA in the Southeast Philadelphia Transit Authority, and I'm by no means an expert to speak on rail in other parts of the country. That said, litigation is the short answer. And by setting forward this baseline, the state is setting a real clear signal that these are the laws that anyone who contracts with MnDOT for operating service will abide by these laws as a baseline. I hope I've answered your question, but I don't feel that I'm enough of an expert to speak candidly about Tri-State Florida.
Okay, so, Madam Chair and members, so apparently there were some issues where even some of these older laws came into question.
Yes.
And in regions that are doing the same thing or in the process of or have done the same thing we're doing with passenger rail. So my understanding is just sort of, add some comfort language to our statutes so that, that type of litigious situation wouldn't happen here in Minnesota. Is that correct, Mr. Qualley?
Madam Chair and Representative and Committee, yes, that is correct.
Anything else?
No, thank you, Madam.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you for the in-depth discussion. And I'm sure that you are really representing your position well. But here, for me, I'm in a situation where we have a department and agency that we have as representing kind of the best interest and the experts in our field, and you having a little bit different interpretation. And I'm wondering if you can give us a reason why your interpretation is more compelling than our expert and their concerns that they have.
Mr. Qualley.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative, committee members, you cut me to the quick here. I have been called an expert. I'm a modest person, number one. Number two, we have presented this and tried to work with MnDOT and help them understand, and we're committed to continue working with MnDOT, Chief Counsel, to help them understand that this really is a benefit to the state. But I have heard MnDOT's concern. It sounds like more of a policy question as to whether this is necessary at this time. What we're suggesting from our perspective and what we know about the national rail map and the movement of passenger rail new starts and the new operating scenarios that are available, which we encourage, which extends flexibility to MnDOT to not go with just traditional carrier, Amtrak, or Class 1, that this language, we believe, is beneficial to the state of Minnesota and MnDOT. As a citizen and a non-lawyer, I don't know that I can, you know, suggest that I could possibly trump MnDOT's area of expertise. I can only tell you we reached out to them, and we will continue to help them. And this language was presented to MnDOT nearly a week ago, and has. I hope that answers the question.
Any follow-up? Okay, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, I don't feel like we're really getting to the bottom of this in terms of understanding really what's being protected, who's going to benefit, and what the issues are. I mean, there's, you know, some serious words here about liability and. So I don't think we're getting a very fair rendition here of really what's going on. And you're talking about the codes, that's one thing, perhaps, but the federal regulations, that's, to me, that sounds like we're lifting from federal regulations into something now that will be our state code, and that's sort of a different path. So this feels, you know, like it needs a good, and frankly, a good long discussion between the two of the parties and brought back when that's been resolved.
Thank you. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, we've talked about comfort language here, and this does anything but comfort certain members of this committee who actually know a little bit about this stuff and have had history in the past of dealing with language like this that's attempted to be inserted. So I don't know who the comfort here is for, but it's not for members of this committee, at least this member of this committee. Let me only speak for myself. I see notwithstanding in here several times, and that's legal language. And it's notwithstanding certain sections of law that we could take the next several hours pulling the books down, trying to figure out what in the heck we're notwithstanding against. So I'm not going to speak any more to this, Madam Chair, except to say that the train is not leaving the station within the next 2 weeks, and I know Chair Hornstein is going to take this bill up again and to insert it in that committee. If we actually do have comfort, that the comfort language is comfortable and everybody's okay with it, I'm fine with that. But putting it in here today just sounds a lot like we're jamming somebody. And I would prefer not to do that. But, Madam Chair, that's just me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, would you talk further about it?
Madam Chair?
It looks like we have a discussion. Mr. Qualley.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, it's certainly not our intention to do that, what is Representative Beard has described. When we speak of comforting language, I would prefer to call it clarifying language. And, you know, the piece here is we had testimony in the committee for myself and others earlier this week. And we heard Transportation Passenger Rail Office, Mr. Crom, say that the department expects regulatory compliance with any passenger operation. Set lines 2.21 through 2.31 are our federal laws, and by having a voice for railroad workers, that is an essential part of assuring regulatory compliance for safety, security, and stability in the workforce. And, you know, I did put out the three scenarios that any New Start passenger rail would generally fall under. And, you know, it's the scenario where the state would become an operator or the state would contract with a third-party operator, that this clarifies that our federal labor laws for safety, security, and stability in the workforce would be subject to. So thank you very much, and I hope that helps to some degree. We're certainly not trying to fast-track, and we're committed to work with MnDOT, and I can have our counsel out here on your call. Thank you.
Are there any other questions, comments? If Representative Earhart?
You know, we're moving this bill out of here as policy, and we're going to put it in Representative Hornstein's committee, and if there's some problems with it, they certainly can adjust it then. Maybe we can have several attorneys from MnDOT and several from this camp come and sit down and argue about it before next time you present this in your committee.
Well, I think
is that possible?
Representative Hornstein?
Meantime, Chair, we should get it out of here and move it, or we're going to be here.
Well, Madam Chair, I think my understanding, and maybe Mr. Scheer could verify it, is that we'll be taking this up in about 72 hours. So I guess I would just say, I mean, I'm fine with this. I support this. I think we should support this. But, you know, if your attorneys can't be there in person, maybe a memo of some kind could be delivered to our committee. And my understanding from the other side of the aisle is that in particular lines 17 through 20 may need some further explanation. So, you know, I think we can work on that.
9 to 20.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, okay.
I think we have a clear idea of what the concerns are. So, but I have not.
Madam Chair.
Yeah. First, mm-hmm. Let's represent it.
No,
first,
so I mean, but I'm personally supportive of this. I think it's important. I've carried this legislation in the past. I understand and want to be responsive to the other side.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, I doubt any of us can say what we're agreeing to. I think that's treacherous. We're talking about liability, possibly past liability, who knows, millions of dollars somebody's, you know, wanting to dump on the state. I don't know, but it doesn't sound very believable and very safe. I think we just deserve an explanation.
Thank you.
I would ask you to hold off and lay it over and get it right.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Sundin.
If I get the final word here, I just urge everybody to vote on the affirmative on this one and move this along. And I think we've got a good commitment from everybody else, the other chairs, that we're going to hear all the testimony that we need to from the attorneys, and we'll be clear on this before it leaves. Before it gets to the floor. So.
Okay, thank you.
Roll call.
Is there anyone else from the audience?
What?
Okay, and Representative Runbeck has called for a roll call. We will take a vote on this. Again, this is the amendment A13-0282, and we'll proceed with the vote.
Representative Mason?
Yes.
Representative Earhart?
Yes.
Representative Swatsky?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
Representative Sundin?
Yes.
Representative Simonson?
Yes.
Representative Seltzer?
Yes.
Representative Rosenthal?
Yes.
Representative Runbeck?
No.
Representative Petersburg?
No.
Representative Beard?
No.
Representative Fitzsimmons?
No.
Okay. For Amendment A13-0282, and the vote 8-4, so the amendment does pass.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, another Representative Sundin amendment, MB-804. Representative Sundin.
This is in relation to, Madam Chair, this is in relation to autonomous vehicles, driverless vehicles, and we have a person that has a representative that has a piqued interest in this that is ready to speak to it. And he is, Representative Mahoney is here, and if you would.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. Autonomous vehicles, another word for it is driverless cars. What this amendment does is just tries to bring people together to talk about it so that we can develop a set of legislation for next year or bring forth the ideas. This is coming. This is coming. Three states already have it, have laws, and if we don't get ahead of it, it'll pretty much be imposed upon us. So I am just asking for the Commissioner of Transportation to sit down and bring people together and start talking about it. Otherwise, we could always just take the California bill and try to move that.
Thank you. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mahoney, thanks for bringing this forward. I was hoping you were including drones in here and we could actually shoot drones down, but this is not a drone bill, apparently.
I think Representative Kahn has the bill.
Oh, good. I'll sign him on. I plan to vote aye on your bill, Mr. Mahoney.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments on this amendment? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address this? Seeing no one, we will take we will vote. All those in favor of amendment MB-AO4, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, we have Amendment A13-0276, and I believe Representative Beard, this is yours.
Madam Chair, yes, this is a bill that I have. It's an amendment version of a bill I've carried several times in the past, and we alternate. Representative Bly and I alternate. This is colloquially known as the Dan Patch repeal. So I'm happy to offer that, and if you'd like, I'd like to just mention a note.
Please.
I've been asked to include from Ms. Susie McCasium, a council member from the city of Northfield, where Representative Bly resides, saying that the city is very much in support of the repeal of the Dan Patch prohibitions that are currently in law. That's the amendment. I encourage the adoption. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments on this amendment? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On behalf of the cities of St. Louis, Park, Edina, Bloomington, and several others that I haven't contacted today, they suggest that this not pass and that we remain in moratorium on this corridor. There was originally was put in here after the Dan Patch Corridor Commission in 2001 did a study, a feasibility study at some expense. Now, I only have excerpts from it here, but it's about an inch thick if you care to read it. But what it boils down to is that this area is not ready. After, in fact, the North Star Corridor fulfills its promises, and after the Red Rock commuter rail is constructed and fulfills this promise, then maybe come back and look at this. Is the way the the feasibility study is written. There are too many problems with this. We have homes that are directly adjacent to the track all the way through those at least those three towns and maybe others. They need extensive track upgrade, a new bridge. The railroad owns this. They've had very two railroads actually. One owns the bridge and one owns the rest of the right-of-way, and they have not had good luck when they try to negotiate with the railroads. They need additional takings for sidings, and they're very happy right now with running 10-mile-an-hour freight along that route infrequently, once or twice a day. And if you think there was an uprising over the noise affair coming out of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, if we start fiddling with this, you're going to have an even stronger reaction. Now, I've received several reports, several phone calls and emails from folks in Northfield. The one that I particularly like is the one with the college student down there who wants to ride the rail back and forth to college. And I thought, well, should we build another railroad for him to get back and forth or some other method? In any event, this is not anywhere on the spectrum of planning as it shouldn't be, as it was mentioned in the report. And I'd be happy to read you ad infinitum report, parts of the report, if you'd like. But that would be an opposition of it. Right now, we have the representatives Lanchesky, Earhart, Simon, Rosenthal, and their cities opposed to this, as well as in memory of Representative Senator Twilliger and Belanger.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Chair Earhart, for that description. This gives me a lot of hope because earlier on I've been hearing that we don't do any earmarks and that we have faith in the Department of Transportation making decisions on what is best and is not as best. And so this is real close to me as kind of a anti-earmark.
Reverse.
Which, kind of reverse earmark, which then gives me hope for Highway 14. So thank you.
Well, of course, Madam Chair, this is not based on just somebody earmarking. They actually did a study that cost them many thousands of dollars. Dakota County, that's where this thing goes through, you know, part of it. Anyway.
Any other questions at the table or comments? Okay. From the audience, please. Mr. Tennyson. Please sit.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robert Tennyson. I'm from Minneapolis. I represent the I-35W Solutions Alliance. It's our position that the provision in the law should be repealed, not because we're supporting any particular transportation form in that mode, but it's just not sensible to prevent people talking about it. The $35 Solutions Alliance was actually involved in the original study. We contracted with the state. Dakota County acted as a fiscal agent. We also included Edina and St. Louis Park in a contract with the study, so we're quite familiar with what it said. We were also very familiar with the high cost of capital that would be necessary, even though it might have high ridership projections, and that's why it was never rated high. The provision was put in the law because it obviously stirred up a lot of interest. And not even talk about it is somewhat a case of head in the sand. So the 35W Solutions Alliance, which includes Hennepin Scott and Dakota counties, the cities of Minneapolis, Richfield, Bloomington, Burnsville, Savage, Lakeville, and Elko New Market, took a position, is in our legislative agenda to seek the repeal of the support the repeal of it. It doesn't take us into a step of development or planning or anything like that. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience?
I have a question, Madam Chair.
Representative Rosenthal, I'm sorry.
Mr. Tennyson, it's my understanding that Bloomington is not in favor of this. Could you speak to that?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Tennyson.
Representative, I don't recall the exact vote within the board of directors of the I-35W Solutions Alliance, but the majority supported this provision. And this is not a new position for us.
Right. Thank you. The Bloomington City Council does not support this.
That may well be.
Representative, Mr. Tennyson.
But they should.
Anyone else? All right. We'll now vote on the amendment A13-0276. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed?
No.
No.
That's a good question. What? The motion failed. Next amendment. Do we have any more? Okay, the Fair Box Recovery Plan, and this is H416AH. This belongs to whom? Representative Beard?
Yep.
Thank
Madam
you.
Chair.
Proceed.
I only had two amendments for you today. We had the one that Scott County supported. Now this is the one that I support. Madam Chair, you know I serve in the Energy Committee, and one of the things we do with energy policy is we put round numbers to it, like 40 by 20 or 25 by 25, and as I'm looking at farebox recovery ratios in transit, I thought, hey, I've got an idea. Although they're struggling in around the 30%, which is pretty good, I think we can strive for better. And so I come up with an idea that if by 2020 we could strive for 40% farebox recovery, this would be a good thing for the transit system. So, Madam Chair, that's the amendment that I'm offering, that we set a bar for our friends at in transit, both opt-outs and the big white bus company, as I affectionately call them, that they strive for a 40% recovery ratio. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments, Representative Hornstein?
Well, thank you very much. I'm not a big fan of mandates, and no, I'm joking. I was waiting, Representative Beard. No, I would speak against this. We have one of the best systems in the country for farebox recovery when you compare it to others. And I just wanted to quickly compare us to some other cities. Since all of these cities have much better football teams, I thought that at least we could have a better bus system, right? Although Portland doesn't. But, for example, so we have a 32% farebox recovery. Philadelphia's 30, Cleveland 29. Well, we're better than the Browns. Okay. Cleveland's 29, Denver 28%, Miami 27%, Seattle 27, Pittsburgh 26, Portland 24, Boston 23, Atlanta 23, Baltimore 20, Houston 19, Oakland 18. From my understanding, in terms of major metropolitan areas, only San Diego eclipses us. So we're actually doing very well compared to other regions, other peer regions. And on our light rail system, on Hiawatha, we're actually getting pretty close to 40, Representative Beard. We're at just over 35% farebox recovery for Hiawatha. So I think that we're doing very well. I think in order to get to this mandate, we would have to increase fares significantly. And, of course, we know that when fares increase, ridership decreases, and then that's not good for the system. So while I appreciate your interest in increasing our farebox recovery, I think we're on the right path, and I'm very pleased with how we stack up to our peer region. So I would urge a no vote.
Are there any comments, questions at the table? Representative Rundhack.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would urge support of this amendment. I'm reading what's going on in the transit world. There's a lot of countervailing forces which are suggesting, you know, the best way to get ridership, of course, is to have free ridership. So, you know, in as much as we kind of hear that gathering storm, I would say that we ought to be really positioning ourselves to, you know, to sort of fight that off and maintain a position that we are going to insist on farebox recovery. Thank you.
Any others? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to remark on this? Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetton, and I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. Appreciate the opportunity to be here this afternoon. In regards to the amendment, the council does not support this amendment. We agree with many of the comments that Representative Hornstein made relating to our transit fares, and we did take a look at what the impact of this would mean, and that would mean we'd have to raise our current fares by 41% between the next 7 years in order to accommodate that study. What we've also found is that when you raise fares, we do lose ridership, and in that context, we would have to actually raise fares higher than the 41% in order to make up for the ridership that would be lost due to that. We are very conscious of fares, and I can appreciate Representative Beard's concept, but when we put it into practical terms, it doesn't work very well for our system, and we're afraid that it would actually potentially increase congestion rather than relieve it.
Thank you, Representative Beard.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Shetland, for your comments. But I'd like to point out to the committee that we actually do have some routes, correct me if I'm wrong, where fare box recovery runs nearly 100%. I think that is an accurate statement, isn't it?
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, we do have one route in particular. It's the the 467 that runs from Lakeville into downtown. Mm-hmm. That route runs at about a 70% subsidy rate, but that is more of a it's the exception, not the norm. But a number of our routes do hover around, mostly around the 32% rate. And I would also like to note that the legislative auditor, in their comments and in their report that came out a few years ago, mentioned about how we were so competitive with our rates.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, I think you went just the opposite way of what I was intending, Mr. Shetland. We have some routes that are nearly 100% fare box recovered for their operations, not subsidy, not 100% subsidy, I mean 100% recovery. And Madam Chair, that's the point is the challenge that could be laid down here reveals the bureaucratic thinking that the only solution is to raise rates, and that's definitely not the case. Some of the routes actually have value that people are happy to pay for. They're in places where people ride because the ridership is high. There's several ways to accomplish the goal, and raising the rates is not the first one, and it should definitely not be the only one. So I think the challenge has been thrown down to right-size the routes, place the routes where people actually want to go, entice new riders onto the system, and then price it accordingly so we get closer to 40%. Seems to be a pretty low bar. If San Diego can get closer, I think we're better looking at above average than San Diego is. But raising rates is not the only way to do this. There are other ways to attract riders, to crack fare box recovery. And the fact is, some of our routes are actually well above 40%. In fact, I understand there's a couple of them that are approaching full operational coverage. So thank you, Madam Chair. I know where the amendment's going, but I do want to make the point that there are ways we can improve fare box recovery and improve the transit system so it serves people better.
Mr. Shetland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Beard. I appreciate your comments, and we'd like to continue to have this conversation with you. But the way it is right now, the council can't support this amendment. And just regarding the San Diego point, is San Diego has a rail line that goes right from San Diego down to Tijuana, and they call it the Tijuana Express or something like that, and that really is the major exception. And when you look at fare recovery on light rail transit, we do very, very well. And again, I'd just like to restate that we do pay very close attention to fare recovery, and I know Representative Beards has very good intentions, and I don't take any pleasure speaking against his amendment, but at this point we do not support it.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience? Oh, I'm sorry, well, Representative Runbeck.
Madam Chair, I'd like to request a roll call.
Yeah.
Okay.
Representative Sawatsky.
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, could you just explain to me, you said that there's other ways to generate instead of raising the prices. I have no clue. How else could we get money so that it would work? I mean, do you have an idea?
Yes.
Oh,
Representative
good.
Beard.
Sorry, Madam Chair, there's a couple. Operationally, we can change the fuel source on the bus. They don't have to run on diesel fuel. They can switch to natural gas, which slashes the fuel cost almost in half. You can right-size the buses. They don't all have to be 53 feet long. Buses, especially in the middle of the day, can be less expensive to run and run smaller vehicles. Some of the routes could probably be contracted out to, I think, a Houston-style jitney operation where people actually almost subscribe, as it were, for on-demand services that feed regular bus routes that do have high fare box recovery. Those are just a few things that come to mind, Madam Chair. And I'm cognizant of the fact that we have the twin peaks of demand in the morning and in the evening, and that's interesting and difficult to manage for. But there's ways we can work around that. So obviously, Representative Swatsky, after having sat in this committee for 10 years and bandied this about, Representative Hornstein and I could go on and on and on about how the buses run and how we could make them run even better. But there are several things that could be done, and I just wanted to put the challenge down there for them. So.
Thank you. Representative Swatsky.
Thank you. And being a freshman, I felt I needed to ask that question, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Any other questions? We were working on the audience. Okay, seeing none. We are going to do a roll call on Amendment H1416A8.
Representative Mason?
No.
Representative Earhart?
No.
Representative Runbeck?
Yes.
Representative Beard?
Aye.
Representative Fitzsimmons?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Petersburg?
Yes.
Representative Swatsky?
No.
Representative Seltzer?
No.
Representative Simonson?
No.
Representative Sundin?
No.
Thank you. It is 7-4, so the amendment does fail. Next, I have H1416A10, and would somebody, would the author like to?
That's my amendment, Madam Chair,
and Representative Runbeck.
It goes to the Transportation Ombudsman. And I just felt that because we don't have enough information on really the need for or the effectiveness of this office, that we should ask for it to be sunsetted.
Okay, thank you. And it looks like Representative Nelson would like to speak to this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as the Ombudsman bill was a bill I carried, and I believe is being the author is incorporating the bill. And the reason I would speak against this amendment to sunset it, in the future, if we want to do that, we can do that legislatively. But the reason why we brought the bill forward in the first place was with the switch of commissioners originally, there was thought that this program might go away. There's been demonstrated reasons why it has been helpful. It saved the division, it saved the department money, it's cut down on disputes, it's helped settle disputes. The simplest situations, as I testified in my when I presented the bill, from where a woman went after they did work on the road outside of her house, they created a puddle that she had to walk through to get her mail. The ombudsman working with MnDOT and the post office got it fixed so that the situation fixed so that she no longer had to walk through a puddle to get her mail every day. That seems minor. To the far side of that, that was the examples I gave, was when they did Highway 61 in the southwest or southeastern part of the metro area here, that a member or a citizen of the state of Minnesota, their walls in their basement cracked and moved, and there was a dispute as to who was going to pay for it and what caused it, and the ombudsman was able to get the situation solved, and the person was able to get the money to fix their house. And so this was able to get the money to fix their house. And so this is what the ombudsman does, and it's important, and I want, the reason I put the bill forward is there was fear that it was going to go away. I saw value in it, and the department sees value in it. As they testified, they were neutral on the bill, but they see value in the position. The current commissioner is going to continue the program, but my concern is for commissioners down the road, and that's why I don't want to have a sunset on it. I think this is a good program to go forward that we need to have to help Minnesota and to save money for the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Representative. And I don't think anybody here argued the value of the ombudsman. I mean, that wasn't the issue. The issue was that currently it is very valuable, but there is, as you heard, the department was neutral in regards to this. This simply says And you must agree that if this is sunsetted at the end, we can also extend that sunset as well. But so oftentimes at the legislature, we put things in that go on forever, even though it may have run its course. And 3 years from now, or 7 years, or 8 years from now, if we don't have put something in that requires us to look back at it, oftentimes it just stays in forever. And who knows what other programs might be even more effective later. And so having a sunset in only means that it requires us to reevaluate it. And I think a program that is good today and that we still want to continue on, 3 years from now, if we look at it and it says it still is, we'll just extend it. But at least it requires us to take a look at it rather than just filing it away and put it together. So I think this is a reasonable request for something that is new, a bureaucracy that is always growing. We always had to have something that says, reevaluate. Let's take a look at it. I think that's positive and prudent.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments? Anybody in? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Nelson.
And Madam Chair, and again, the reason I brought the bill forward, and I believe there's value in this, and we in the legislature, that when we come back every year, or if we go to every 2 years, if that ever happens again, that we go back to just going once every 2 years, we have the ability to do that. That is part of our job as legislators to do that, to look at every piece of the bureaucracy or of the government functions we have, and whether to continue them or discontinue them, and we can do that on our own. We don't need a sunset to force us to do that.
Thank you. Seeing no questions at the table, is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify? Seeing none, we'll vote on Amendment H-141-6A-1-A-10. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
No.
Okay, the motion for the amendment fails.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you very much. Representative Dorholt, we have your amendments before us. It's A13-0281.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the amendment for inclusion in the policy omnibus bill.
Would you like to give us a brief description?
As mentioned before, this is simply a kind of, you could see it as a federal conformity bill that will allow the trucks who have to carry idle reduction technology, helps fuel burn more cleanly. From Minnesota's law, currently is at 400 pounds. Federal law has it increased up to 550 pounds. So this is just to match state law with federal law.
Thank you. Are there any comments or questions? Seeing none from the members, is there anybody in the audience that would like to comment on this amendment? Seeing none, okay, well, we will. All those in favor of A13-0281 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment passes. Thank you. Okay, Representative Earhart, would you like to renew your motion on the DE1 amendment?
Yes, if someone, Madam Chair, could explain to me why this is in House File 1460 as amended. Oh. I would have done that motion. Okay. Removing the amendment H1416DE1.
As amended.
As amended.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The amendment does, DE1 does pass as amended. And then, okay, is there any discussion on the bill before we proceed on the vote, with the vote? Is there anyone in the audience? Okay. We'll now, Representative Earhart will renew his motion that we move this to Transportation Finance.
Recommended.
Be recommended to the Transportation Finance Committee.
To Transportation Finance. Thank you.
Any other comments? If not, we'll take the vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Okay, the DE1 amendment as amended passes and is going to be re-referred to the Department of Earth. Okay, I apologize. It is House File 1460 as amended is recommended to Transportation Finance Committee to pass. And if there are no comments, we stand adjourned.
Right. Thank you all.
Have a good weekend.